You may have heard about the Pan-African e-commerce company, Jumia's plans to close its food delivery business. The company was started in 2012 and quickly became a sort of an online supermarket where you could buy phones, home appliances and other essentials, and later ventured into the food delivery business. Using the tag, the Amazon of Africa, the founders of the business, all of them not nationals of any African country, raised millions of dollars in investment, culminating in a public listing on the New York Stock Exchange in 2019. It even had the coveted unicorn status, which refers to a privately held startup company with a value of over $1 billion. All along, however, Jumia was bleeding money, especially on its food delivery business, where the company delivered each meal at a loss due to stiff competition. So, how did the one success story of Africa's e-commerce, at least on face value, get here? I've been speaking to Emeka Ajene, a technology expert based in Nigeria, where Jumia runs its biggest African operation. Emeka, it's great having you on Focus on Africa. How are you doing? Are you in Lagos today?
Yeah, I'm doing very well, Richard. Thank you for having me.
Great. So our focus today is on Jumia and its decision to withdraw from the food delivery segment. So first things first, could you start by telling us about the story of Jumia? It's a company that's had success in so many ways apart from the financial one. Would I be right, or would that be an accurate assessment?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think, you know, Jumia is certainly an interesting business. It's been a pioneer in many ways. But to answer your question about the story of Jumia, to tell that story, I think you have to go back to about a decade ago in 2012, right? Jumia was founded, or initiated, I should say, by Rocket Internet, which is a German company, a German startup studio that's often called a clone factory, because their model is to replicate successful businesses from the West in other markets, right? So Jumia was their clone of Amazon in Africa, right? So between 2012, when the company started, and 2019, the company raised nearly $1 billion to create that Amazon of Africa, and it became the first startup unicorn from Africa in 2016. And in 2019, the company went public and listed on the New York Stock Exchange and was the first startup from Africa to list on a major global exchange, right? So Jumia has certainly been successful as a pioneer of tech startups in Africa, and certainly the company's early backers like Rocket Internet certainly had good financial outcomes.
Okay. I mean, it's a trailblazer and also a story of success. Got a mixed bag in terms of its performance over the past 10 years. I like what you mentioned about the $1 billion valuation, because, I mean, that really made a lot of news and grabbed a lot of attention globally, not just here in Africa. I'm curious to know, where was Jumia deriving all this value from, and why did the value evaporate?
I think it's important to note, Richard, that Jumia was valued at over $1 billion by the private markets and public markets. And what's particularly interesting here is that public market valuation. So when Jumia went public on the NYSE, it effectively everyone who bought stock in Jumia was saying, hey, I believe that this company is, you know, a billion-dollar company, right? But today, you know, as you mentioned, that valuation is at less than $400 million. Those same investors are saying this company is no longer worth that $1 billion. So I think what happened really, if you go back, you know, Jumia's story has, you know, really been about growth. When the company went public, you know, active customers were growing about 50% year over year, right? In the IPO prospectus, the word growth appeared over 100 times, right? So it sold an Amazon of Africa growth narrative that Western investors really bought into. And that's what led to that initial value, right? Kind of optimism about future growth. And to some extent, all companies rely on optimism and narrative about the future. But over time, that kind of narrative has to turn into numbers, and that story has to turn into substance. Right. So I think that decline, that 70% decline in the Jumia's valuation since the IPO, is all the public investors saying that this company is all story, no substance. And one key example here is that for Jumia, a company which is all about mass market e-commerce, which is building the Amazon of Africa, you know, over 10 years after its founding, Jumia has less than 8 million active annual customers. And that's on a continent of 1.4 billion people. So this is a penetration rate of really less than, you know, 1%, about, you know, half of 1%.
One of the stories that have dominated the news headlines recently has been Jumia's decision to close the food delivery business across seven African countries. Why did they make this decision? Is it a strategic one, or is this just a temporary setback, but then they would be making a comeback at some point?
Yeah, I don't think it's a temporary setback at all. In fact, I'm not sure you'd classify it as a setback, but it's certainly not temporary. So in November last year, Jumia's board effectively said enough is enough. It replaced the longtime co-CEOs who had been there since the company was founding with a new CEO, Francis Dufay, right? So this new CEO has come in with a mandate to cut costs, to preserve cash, and to find a path to profitability. Right. And a large part of that is rationalizing investments. You know, what businesses should we be in? What businesses should we be out of? Right. So the food business didn't really make sense for this new CEO under his regime because, for one, it had never been profitable. And so with no profit from this business line and no profit for the business as a whole, and then a cash runway for the company of probably less than 2 years, you know, CEO Dufay made the hard decision. I don't see it as being temporary. It's about Jumia getting its house in order and getting on that path to profitability.
And, you know, Nigeria was really a big market for Jumia. I wonder, was it because there was so much of a reliance on Nigeria when, you know, Jumia launched? You know, it was just obvious that they were going to ride on the positive economic prospects of Nigeria at the time. And the economy didn't grow as it was widely, you know, expected or had been projected. Do you think that was a factor, just relying on this huge market at some point?
You know, I don't know what you want me to say, Richard. I'm sitting here in Nigeria, so it's hard for me to, you know, kind of talk negatively about the country. But in all seriousness, ultimately, if you're trying to tell a story about being a Pan-African player, you really have to, part of that story has to be Nigeria. You have to have a significant exposure to the Nigerian market. You know, but for Jumia specifically, I think it's not just, you know, Nigeria. Nigeria was certainly a factor, but other countries the company operated in also faced economic woes. And specifically, Egypt and Ghana have also been called out by Jumia's management.
And let's talk about competition, because what normally happens is that if you're shopping around and you're going onto these apps, you definitely find a huge discounts because there's one competitor here and another one there, maybe with a bigger deal than the other. What part did this play in making Jumia unprofitable? Are other operators profitable? Is that the same case?
That's a very good question, right? And I think it speaks to why kind of Jumia also got out of this this business, right? So food delivery, you know, is really easy to get into, and it's easier for competitors to spin up an app. Those sign up merchants, and then you're in business. It's not unusual for food delivery companies anywhere in the world to burn money to grow and to buy market share. And Africa specifically, the likes of Glovo, you know, Yango, Uber Eats, in terms of global international players, and various other local players like Yasser in Nigeria, in Algeria, or Chowdeck in Nigeria, they put downward pressure on Jumia's commissions and put pressure on its marketing costs, right? So you have to spend more to make less. It's not a great recipe for business, and that's part of why Jumia got out of this business, right? So to your question about other players, you know, certainly I think other companies like Glovo are probably unprofitable, but their calculus is that they'll probably monopolize the market over time and earn their profits kind of later, especially with, you know, other players like Jumia getting out of that business.
That's really an interesting perspective. I just wonder, just describe this to me. How big was the food business for Jumia, and how different was that from its other business lines like home appliances, for example?
In terms of size, you know, Jumia's food business contributed around 11% of its total sales. And in terms of how it's different from other business lines, I would say that the main thing, again, is that food delivery is really a market with very low barriers to entry, right? On the other hand, kind of Jumia's other physical mass market e-commerce business requires logistics and other assets that are hard for competitors to replicate, right? So Jumia probably faces more competitive pressure in food delivery than in its core e-commerce business.
And finally, what does this decision mean for e-commerce in Africa? Is it a viable industry that will employ a lot of people in tech as delivery people, so on and so forth?
Look, I think it's still day one for B2C e-commerce in Africa, right? It's undeniable that, you know, the internet penetration is growing, more Africans are coming online. And as more Africans come online, more commerce will happen online. You know, these are kind of the high-level trends. I don't think anyone can dispute that. I think the real question is what models in terms of e-commerce make the most sense, right, for the African continent. Is it mass market, Amazon-style, Jumia-style e-commerce? Is it more fragmented social e-commerce that leans into Instagram and WhatsApp that people are selling on already? Is it agent-led e-commerce like Kopia Global, Kopia in Kenya or Brymo in Egypt, right? So the opportunity at the end of the day for e-commerce in Africa is large and growing, but there are certainly challenges, right? But it's absolutely a viable industry with the long runway ahead of it. The question today is what's the right model?
All right. Thank you for those very valuable insights, Emeka.
Thank you, Richard. A pleasure for being here with you.
Emeka Ajene, speaking to us from Lagos, Nigeria.